His Excellency the Rajpal, Mr. President, my dear old friend Kapadia, members and friends. I should like to thank you, members of the Institution of Engineers, for inviting me to your annual convention. I am fully aware of the role and functions of your institution, and I am conscious of its growing importance. I have tried to understand your charter and noted with interest the reorganization which has taken place, particularly the constitution of 7 divisions to cover the different disciplines of engineering. This reorganization is an indication of your desire to attract members from all branches of engineering and also to remain united as a professional body, to be able to speak with one voice. I am sure that this will create unity and comradeship in the profession as a whole. The President has referred to the greatest tragedy that overtook our country recently. Lal Bahadur Ji was devoted to peace throughout his life. He died in a foreign country where he had gone on a mission of peace. Throughout his short but glorious tenure as Prime Minister, he showed himself to be a great leader and a wise statesman. His ceaseless efforts led to the signing of the Tashkent Declaration, which has brought hope of peace and happiness in this part of the world. Let me associate myself with the reference made by the President to sad and tragic demise of the great scientist, Sir Homi Bhabha. He was a very fine and excellent combination of a scientist and an administrator. I am sure his death not only India, but the world of science has lost a great leader. Peace is essential for achieving the main objective before us, namely betterment and prosperity of mankind. In this great effort, scientists and engineers have a very important role to play. The real enemies of mankind are poverty, disease and ignorance. Science and technology are the new tools in our hands, which have given us hope to conquer these enemies within the shortest possible time. Engineers and scientists, as masters of these tools, have therefore assumed a special importance. It is possible that their role is not yet fully appreciated by the common man. But this is not surprising, as we are late starters in the field of modern science. In the pre-independence days, the government hardly took any interest in the technical field. The main contact of the government with the people was in the field of law and order and collection of taxes. The general administrator, therefore, became all-powerful in the eyes of the people, and everyone else assumed a secondary place. The superstitious role of the importance of the administrator is thus a legacy of the British days. This situation must not change, and the scientist, engineer, artist, and others with creative power must be given their due place. The administrator can also help this process by giving his wholehearted support. Engineers and scientists are also being required to play more and more important roles in the activities of the government. There has been some debate about the precise role of a specialist in government functions. In the technical field, the advice of the specialist is naturally of highest importance. I have had some experience of administration both in the state as well as in the center, and I can say that the occasions on which the advice of a specialist is ignored are indeed very few and should be few. But it is important to remember that the advice of a specialist is only from one angle. The solution of any administrative problem, to put it in a more technical language, is normally a function of more than one variable. In dealing with such a problem, apart from considering technical aspect, one has also to consider the economic, social and political factors involved. The functions of a specialist and a generalist are therefore complementary, and both are important in their own field. What is necessary today is to utilize their talents in the best possible way for the benefit of the people. I do not want even to suggest that a specialist cannot prove to be a good administrator. In fact, many engineers have proved to be very capable administrators. But when they change the roles, the country loses their talents in the specialized field. In our country, where we have so few qualified men in different technical fields, it is a matter for consideration whether we can afford to divert their talents in merely administrative roles. I think I must now turn to the general problem in the defense field. The first thing that I would like to stress is that defense efforts are not incompatible with the policy of peace. In fact, in my opinion, they are complementary to it. Every country must be prepared to defend its freedom and territorial integrity. A country which has a good defense capability and which is politically and economically strong can become a factor in favor of peace because it forestalls the evil design of a would-be aggressor. I need hardly remind you that engineers have a vital role to play in the defense efforts of the country. Generally, it is in peacetime that you need to develop materials and techniques which could speed up construction under adverse and critical conditions when manpower is difficult to get or apply. The emphasis on quality and economy can never be relaxed, as the security of our forces depends on the quality and durability of your engineering work. I suggest you that your profession as a whole must constantly think of the future, and an engineer has to keep alert and progressive in his outlook to take advantage of the latest developments in the field of equipment and material. I have no doubt that you as a professional body would take interest in this direction. There is an urgent requirement for us to develop our communication system, both from the economic and defense point of view. Speedy movement of men and materials is an essential prerequisite for trade and prosperity, as also for the quick and effective deployment of our forces. Our communication systems are rather outmoded and inadequate. Crash programs are required in the varying and diverse fields of road, rail and air communication. This is truly a challenge to the engineering profession, as also the keeping open of these communications with minimum of disruption and delay. Unusual and unheard of problems are encountered in border area, and both men and machines function under great handicap and strain. These problems are to be studied and overcome, and this is a field in which the institution of engineers could well play an important role. Your president has highly stressed the importance of research and development. There are research and development units in the defense sector for tackling problems in various fields. This effort by itself, however, would not be sufficient. There is a greater need for harnessing the research and development efforts of the nation, and a concerted drive will have to be made to exploit the potential help and cooperation from technical institutions in the country and from industry in this respect would be highly valuable. In this connection, I must refer to the need of self-sufficiency in the field of industrial production. Defense preparedness is intimately linked with the industrial progress, and the strength of modern nations is measured in terms of its industrial potential and progress. I understand that the manufacturing industry in this country in many fields are dependent to a large extent on components which have to be imported from abroad. The recent experience has shown that it is not in the country's interest to depend on other countries in respect of essential needs. We must therefore aim at achieving self-sufficiency in equipment. A logical corollary to this would be that we must now standardize and rationalize the type and variety of equipment to absolute minimum. It is also necessary that there should be a self-imposed discipline among research workers, designers and manufacturers to utilize to the maximum possible extent only such components as are indigenously produced. I know that self-reliance is something which can be easily said and done. Achievement of this aim will require very, very hard work on the part of everyone concerned and coordination of efforts in different sectors. The institution of engineers, which embraces all the engineering faculties, is in a position to play a positive role in this respect. It has often struck me that there should be a greater cooperation and collaboration between civilian and military engineers, so that in times of need, there is better understanding between the two, and the entire technical resources of the country are bent towards the supreme goal of defending the country. Your institution serves such purpose, and I further hope that many of the younger members would be attracted to a career in the service, which offers interesting problems and a challenge to the youth of the country. I would like to thank you again and to say how happy I am to be with you this afternoon. I am greatly impressed by the strength and unity of your profession and conscious of the vital role you have to play in building up a strong and prosperous India. A heavy burden lies on your shoulders, and the nation has every confidence in your ability. I have no doubt that the future belongs to the engineering profession. Good luck. Thank you.